For the smart savers, browsing for bargains day and night, shopping around on comparison sites. For everyone in bidding mode, who loves a two-for-one voucher code. For everyone who wants the best deal, choose TalkTalk for super fast unlimited fibre broadband at a low price that's fixed for the length of your contract. TalkTalk, fairer broadband for everyone.
Rise up! Rise up!
This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Welcome, Arizona Cardinals fans, to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's episode 206, and it's going to feel like a rush show a little bit because the Cardinals play on Thursday night this week, and then we won't have a show till, almost a week after the game is how it'll go. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site for the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And we're here to talk about a number of things. The Cardinals lose to the Minnesota Vikings 27-17 on Sunday. There are some positives, there's some negatives, but the feeling of agitation and dissatisfaction is growing among Cardinals fans as they fall to 1-5. And so we're here to break that down. There's some trade rumors. So basically kind of what we're going to talk about in this game, and we won't basically we're, I think we'll probably end up spending the most time on the last segment. Because by the time many of you listen to this game, the game will have already happened. So we're recording on a Tuesday night. The episode will drop Wednesday sometime, and then the Cardinals will play on Thursday. There's a new trade rumor. Thanks, Jason Luckenfor, I don't trust him when it comes to being dialed in with the Cardinals or the NFL in general. But another player is supposedly on the trading block. We're going to talk the good and the bad, the positive, negative from the game. We're going to look ahead at some matchups against the Denver Broncos. And then we're going to say, is Thursday night a must win? Will there be a midseason firing? And what will it take for this staff not to make it? Whether it's offensive coordinator Mike McCoy, whether it's Steve Wilks, there are definitely fans already calling for their firing. But let's go ahead and get started, Seth, and let's talk about the first rumor. And then now here is the thing. Last show, we were talking about the David Johnson talk, which was never really a thing. Daewon Buchanan, Hassan Reddick, that was Jason Luckenfor of CBS Sports who said that Buchanan is likely to be gone and Reddick is a possibility. And it is Luckenfor once more saying that the Cardinals are open to trading Patrick Peterson. Really, Patrick Peterson, they're open to trading him. And there might be even a little bit of fire to that since former teammate of Peterson, Jerrod Powers, even sort of suggested that as a rebuilding tool and a way to get Peterson in a situation where he can win, which is ultimately what he wants to do. When you saw that report, what was your reaction, Seth?
No way, because it's more absurd from a logistics standpoint than the David Johnson rumor, because here's the deal. The most important positions in the NFL are quarterback, offensive left tackle, pass rusher, and cornerback. And all of a sudden now, you're seeing these speculation and reports that the Cardinals are willing or are open, or however the phrase is made, or listening to offers. That's what they use, listening to offers, because that means that there's no way it's going to happen. But if it does, I had the inside information. If it doesn't, well, it's just they didn't hear anything that interested them. So it's a win-win situation. But here's the deal. if you're going to trade Patrick Peterson, and we'll just throw Chandler Jones in there as well, because it's so unlikely to happen for to either of those players, because one, the positions they play, and two, how cost effective their contracts are in comparison to the rest of the league at their position. Patrick Peterson is one of the, we'll just say five for round number, five best cornerbacks in the NFL. And I think, I don't even think he's top five right now in cornerback contracts. And then Chandler Jones is one of the five best pass rushers in the NFL. And he's not one of the five highest paid players as a pass rusher. So you're talking about guys that produce at a higher level that have team-friendly salaries in perspective to the rest of their positional cohorts. And so the only way that you trade somebody like that is if you're getting something of equal value in return. So, in the never gonna happen land, like if you're trading Chandler Jones, the only type of player you're trading him for is like a Joey Bosa, right? Like somebody that, okay, maybe Bosa's not quite to Jones's level in terms of consistent NFL production yet, but in his time on the field, he's as good. And then he is going to be more cost controlled over 3 years. So that's the thing, is like, there's not the Cardinals aren't the Raiders under John Gruden, where they're going to trade a franchise player at a franchise position for, you know, a measly pick or two measly picks. Like it would have to be such a massive player and pick package that it doesn't make sense. And the craziest thing I saw was, and I won't say what site it was, but there was an SB Nation site that said if the Cardinals are shopping Patrick Peterson, this team, the team that they cover, should be interested. And then you go on to read it, and it's like they should be willing to give up a second round pick. And I'm like, whoa.
What? No, yeah, right. So not only do you have one of the top cornerbacks, arguably the best cornerback in the game in terms of what he does, playing the best ball in his life, at the prime of his life, on a team-friendly contract for that position with 2 years still remaining on his deal, and you're going to do that for a second rounder. Yeah.
Right. So that's my point. It's like, I don't think other teams' fans could even fathom what the cost would actually be, because it would be like it would cost multiple first round picks, or again, like a first round pick and a player. Like, for instance, if you're looking at a team like, just say, the New Orleans Saints, like if the Saints wanted to trade for Patrick Peterson, it would have to be including like Marshawn Lattimore, their young cornerback, and then like a future second round pick as well.
Like, when you think about Chandler Jones, who is entering his last year and had one productive season in 4 years with the Patriots, netted a second round pick. Patrick right. Peterson is on a completely different level.
So, you know, it's just one of those things where I don't think there's any way that any team can really come close to being able to pry away a player in the prime. The thing is, like, a Peterson deal is one of those deals that doesn't happen during the NFL season. It happens on draft night, or like right before the draft, when the Cardinals know what they're getting in return, right? Like,
right.
Like they know, like, oh, hey, we're trading him to the New York Giants for the, you know, third overall pick type thing. Like you don't make that trade for right now to a team like the New England Patriots, then you're going to get the 32nd pick in the NFL draft. Like, that just doesn't – that's not how it works.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. And, you know, like you said about the whole idea of that report and – whether it's something that happened from information from a team or say Peterson's agent, if he's trying to make things happen, when you spread a report, a non-specific trade report, as opposed to saying, you know, the Cardinals are in active trade talks with the Philadelphia Eagles about cornerback Patrick Peterson, that's a different kind of report. But to say that the Cardinals are fielding phone calls or are open to the idea of trading right. Patrick Peterson. There's no way to have any sort of accountability when it comes to that, because, you know, like you said, if the trade never happens, then there's nothing there, because you're just saying, well, they just never heard anything, whatever. And if it does, then you're like, yeah, see, it happened. When we already know that Steve Kimes takes every phone call and every GM takes every phone call. So if, you know, if the Jaguars called the Cardinals and said, hey, we're calling about Patrick Peterson, we're thinking this. Kim himself said sometimes it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't elicit more than just a chuckle. Or even, hey, we want to know about Patrick. What would you consider? Kim's not even saying that he's open and say, well, tell me what you got. He wouldn't give them a price. He would just say, well, what are you willing to offer? Because Peterson, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense on any level, because plus, if you trade Peterson, who's going to be your starting cornerback? It's one thing like when they made the Kevin Cobb trade long, long ago and they traded Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. The Cardinals knew pretty much they were going to get Patrick Peterson. They knew who they were drafting overall, likely. And, you know, it's like the situation when you have a young quarterback behind you. Well, say the Kansas City Chiefs a year ago in the offseason. So they trade Alex Smith, but they had Patrick Mahomes. So say the Cardinals had drafted, you know, Jalen Ramsey, Marshawn Lattimore, that sort of type of player. And they go, okay, we've got a top flight equal cornerback talent under cost control. Yeah, Patrick's expendable. Let's see what we can get for him. And NFL trades don't work like Major League Baseball trades. So in Major League Baseball, you could trade someone like Patrick Peterson of his caliber and net in a rebuild all sorts of prospects.
Oh yeah, you could
get the NFL. You get
like 8-9 guys that can right, could get four NFL top flight
like that.
Right, exactly. Right.
You just can't do that in the NFL. It doesn't work like that because it is really a year-to-year business. So, yeah, it's not going to happen in midseason. And unless he becomes, you know, actively up.
Right, unless he begins to be a guy that is looking to be traded and saying
and
like,
even hey. Then, he's a team captain, so it's not like he's going to sour the locker room or become sour in the locker room. This is the type of player, like if you look at Sam Bradford, who, you know, team captain, got demoted to the third string, and while he's kind of been incognito except for one interview with the media, he's still a great teammate. You know, it's awkward for him, at least for the public eye, but he has no problem with his teammates.
Right. And you know, it's one of those things, again, you look at it, I don't know. I mean, obviously, every team, like you said, has a price, and there are packages that could be put together to entice you for a player. It's actually pretty easy to do so. But for another team, it comes down to, are they willing to, you know, break with their players in the same way? So, you know, that's the thing is, like you said, in the NFL, these player trades rarely happen. And so it's usually for draft picks, and it's usually around when you know what you're getting for the player.
Exactly. Which makes, you know, if you're worried about Patrick Peterson being traded, it would be a shock to me. Now, the Steelers, you know, they're are Steelers reporters out there saying that the Steelers should go out. You know, obviously, they have a defensive problem. They have a cornerback problem. You know, obviously, Patrick Peterson would be a great fit for Pittsburgh. Even still, Patrick Peterson on the Steelers doesn't guarantee him winning any more than what they've already been doing, and they've struggled. They've struggled. So, yeah. If we're talking trade, let's talk in two off seasons from now when that's a possibility. And especially here's the other thing that doesn't make any sense. The Cardinals believe they have their quarterback of the future. Therefore, that's when in this next off season, you know, we anticipate them going out and spending gobs of money to bring in gobs and gobs of talent. That's not the time to be trading away your best talent. Sure, trade away guys that don't fit. Patrick Peterson fits. What we've seen from Peterson this year is arguably his finest play overall. He's playing just as well as a cover guy. He's making plays on the ball. He's being active in run defense. So you could make the argument hasn't ever played a better brand of football than he has this year. He's still in his prime, and he's that contract, which was really big at the time, ain't so big anymore. So it wouldn't make any sense, especially when the Cardinals, even if they're terrible this year, will likely they want to make a move to be a top flight team in the next 2-3 years. And by the time that window ends, that's about the time they can let go of Peterson and let him go elsewhere. If his play drops at all, or his price tag is still high.
Exactly. And so, and again, with Jones and Peterson in tow, they don't have, those are two positions, premium positions that they don't have to worry about. Now, I mean, I don't want to, you know, drag on this, but it also helps us avoid having to talk about the Arizona Cardinals playing football. So, you know, there's these things. So, like, let's, you know, using your example, you know, the Cardinals end up with a top two pick and they're able to pick up Nick Bosa. And, you know, all of a sudden they have Nick Bosa and Chandler Jones, and maybe they bring even Marcus Golden back on a team friendly, you know, type of deal. All of a sudden, like Jess kind of just said, now if you heard a report like, oh, the Cardinals are actively listening to offers for Chandler Jones, all of a sudden that would make sense. But Jess hit the most important thing on the head. We've already seen Jamar Taylor as a starter. They had to go to a, what, 32, 33, 34 year old Ben Wickery. Like, are we really gonna go? Like they don't have Brandon Williams isn't even getting run on a defensive back. Like, it just more than anything, it doesn't make sense from the standpoint of you're already bad. Why would you willingly make yourself worse by giving up your most talented secondary player, maybe the most talented player on your defense?
Yeah, that doesn't make sure. So let's put that to bed. When we come back on the next segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, let's talk actual football, positives and negatives, and before we move on to the Broncos game. So that's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. And a reminder from our friends over at Harry's, that deal is still available for listeners of the podcast. I love my Harry's blades. I love the Harry's program, if you want to call it a program. I love the blades. I love the close, comfortable shave. I love the shave gel. I love the way it smells. I love the way it feels. And I love the price. I love the quality of shave I get when I shave tomorrow morning, you know, Wednesday morning, it's shaving time again. And like I just said before, I ditched the electric blade razor and I went with Harry's, and I don't regret it at all because it gives you the quality of those name brand blades with the price. That's not much more than that. It costs more than the disposable, but it's so much better, the quality. But you can get them delivered right to your door, $2 a blade compared to $4 or more. And here's the trial offer. for our listeners only, get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for the close, comfortable shave. You get the ergonomic handle, you get the 5-blade razor, you get the shave gel, and you get a travel blade cover. So what you do is you can redeem the trial set at harrys.com/CRED. Make sure you go. Again, that's harrys.com/CRED to redeem the offer. Get the trial set. Test it out. I promise you, you won't regret it. You will love the Harry's blade. And let them know that I sent you this help to support the show. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best Arb Cardinals talk on the web. And unfortunately, we do have to talk about the game against the Vikings. A 27-17 loss in which there were some good things, there were some bad things. Let's get the bad out of the way, all right? Let's go ahead and do that. What were the things that stood out to you most notably as what were problems against the Vikings on Sunday?
I think the first thing you notice with the problems for the Arizona Cardinals continues to be offensively, the run game is just, I mean, it's non-existent. I guess that's the easiest way to put it, right? It's just not there. There's nothing there. It's not good. It's not productive. It's not creating any openings for the rest of the offense. And so, and on Sunday, I thought this was probably the worst performance early in the game, but the worst performance that we've seen from David Johnson in quite a while. There were a couple plays where he could have made plays and he wasn't able to. And so you wonder now if that comes with concern from, you know, coming back from injury, concerns with all of the things that you've heard about him struggling with the offense. It's been a frustrating thing to watch, and it continues to be a frustrating thing for this team because, you know, they wanted to come into the season and their identity, and we'll get to the other part, and I'll let you take the other part, but their identity wanted to be a team that ran the football. And statistically speaking, they are the worst running team in the NFL. And except when it comes to rushing touchdowns, that's actually quite fascinating to me, is that they're like 14th in the NFL in rushing touchdowns. But still, you know, they are struggling to find a way to get David Johnson going. They're struggling to integrate Chase Edmonds at all. And all of their signings and moves to improve the offensive line and running the football, I mean, none of them have paid off in any way so far.
Nope. And if you look at least on the offensive line, what were the major concerns overall was durability. Andre Smith has managed to play in half the games and has finished two of them. Justin Pugh now is hurt. Well, it doesn't look like he's going to miss any time. Mike Iupati and his history of injuries continue. And he was so great in the preseason. He was so good in training camp in the preseason, and he has been unimpressive, to say that. That's probably the best way to describe him. It's been that. And so, yes, the running game. Let's look at statistically. They have the fewest rushing yards with 384 on the season. They have the lowest yards per attempt at 3.2. They average only 64 yards a game. David Johnson, and I was giving you some numbers about David Johnson, and he has 92 carries this year. 16 of them have gone for 0 yards or fewer. So zero or negative yards. 16. So 16 out of 92, you're looking at about 1 out of every 5 of his carries goes for no gain or less. And on the other side, explosive plays are almost non-existent. And this was the case again against the Vikings. He had one 10-yard gain. He has six carries this season out of 92 to go for 10 yards or more, and only two carries to go for more than 15 yards. This is not the David Johnson we expected. This is not the David Johnson that we've seen. But what's the stat that you gave? What's the stat that you gave that you told me before the show in terms of that? That's just amazing. It's an amazing stat considering how little, I guess. They don't run the ball the least. There are two teams that have fewer carries than their 119. Detroit has 114 and Tampa Bay has 111. But what do we know about the Cardinals that you saw?
The Cardinals run the ball almost less than any team in the NFL. And yet they run the ball up the middle. So the Cardinals, there you go. Cardinals are 28th in total rush attempts and yet rank first in the NFL. First, not like first in their division, not first in the NFC, first in the NFL in plays run up the middle, right up the middle. So they run the ball. They've run the ball the 28th most in the NFL. And they've run 72 times up the middle. In 2016, they ran the ball total all season 164 times up the middle. So they're almost halfway there and they're only six games into the season. It's just an incredible eye-opening stat to how ineffective the run game has been.
And it doesn't make any sense. And that was coming into the season, one of the biggest disappointments. And, you know, the Cardinals wanted to be able to run the ball. The other thing that they wanted to do was stop the run. And, oh, it's interesting. You look at the overall numbers, you'll look at and say they are a terrible run defense team. And that's a valid point. The truth is they're almost good, but the almost part makes them bad. They are number 31 in the league in rush defense. Only one team is worse, and that would be the Denver Broncos, which we'll talk about in the preview. I'm worried about this game because the Denver Broncos run the ball extremely well. The Cardinals can't stop it. While Denver doesn't stop anybody on the run, the Cardinals haven't been able to do it. So that's a concern. But the Cardinals, in terms of rush defense, they have been rushed against more than any other team in the league. They have given up the second most yards on the ground. They have given up more rushing touchdowns than any other teams. They are giving up the second most yards per game at more than 150. But the interesting thing is the yards per carry against them is pretty reasonable. It's not good, but it's not horrible. They're tied for 19th at 4.4 yards per attempt. Now, if you compare that to the Denver Broncos, who are last in the league, give up 5.6 yards per run. And that, you know, they give up 10 more yards per game, but they've been run against, you know, 32 fewer times. Against the Minnesota Vikings, they gave up 195 yards total. 129 of those yards came on five carries. Latavius Murray, 155 rushing yards. 109 of them came on four carries. So if you break that down, Latavius Murray, out of 20 of his 24 carries, gained 46 yards. That's really good rush defense. Then he had four carries that went for 21, 22, 26, and 28 yards. That's terrible run defense. And it continues to be the same story over and over again. Gap discipline. And if you look at the film, you're going to see it on those explosive plays. There you get one or two guys that jump out of their gap. And the reason, I don't know why it's so hard to stay in your one gap. Al Holcomb preaches it's trust. They're not trust. Now, what do we know? The two names that have been come up, that have come up as being consistent, Corey Peters, Chandler Jones. They're playing the rush consistently, which means they're getting inconsistent play from Robert Kendiche, and Steve Wilks has said as much, and you're getting bad run defense from your linebacker. So Josh Bynes and, you know, Hassan Reddick in recent games, probably Buda Baker to some extent, Antoine Bethea, Trey Boston. So when you get to that second level, you're losing gap integrity and you're missing tackles. So that's, again, the Cardinals should be a great run defense team. They've always been for years. They have the personnel. Look at the personnel they have up front. Chandler Jones, one of the most disruptive players. Like, and I'm going to keep saying it. In 2017, there was no player more disruptive behind the line of scrimmage. That included the running game because Chandler Jones led the league in sacks. He led the league in quarterback hits and tackles for loss, which is a run stat. He stopped more runs behind the line of scrimmage than any player in the league. Corey Peters, one of the best run defenders. Now, great run defenders don't get a lot of play because they don't pile up numbers. But when Corey Peters is in the game, the run defense is good. When he comes out of the game, the run defense is atrocious. And so you've got the two identities of the team that Steve Wilks had coming in. He wants to stop the run and he wants to run the football. And not only are they not doing it, so they're bad at it, they're like the worst in the league at both overall.
Right. And so that's the perplexing thing. I think that's what's got fans most frustrated and jaded overall, is that the identity that this team was supposed to have is not even arguable, but is their worst aspect of who the team is. And yet that is who the team is still. And so it's like, do the coaches not understand, you know what I'm saying? Like, why is this? What's going on? And yet there's no changes. There's nothing's changed. I mean, they've tried some personnel tweaks here and there, and it's like, okay, so then who is this team? What is this team? Like, and that was one of the things that I think if there are moves, and this is the next kind of conversation we're going to have, but if there are moves that are going to be made, I think that could be what the downfall is for this coaching staff more than anything. Is if you're going to have a mantra or say this is who we are as a team, and then those are not just the worst aspects of your team, but then you don't make any adjustments on what you are as a team, I think it just sends the signal that you as a coach don't know what you have in your team, right? Like, because if you're saying like, oh, we're going to be a team that runs the ball and stops the run, you know, and we're the best at it, and then you're the worst at it, statistically the worst at each part of that, but then you keep running your head into that brick wall, so to speak. What on earth does that do? Like, other than to signal that you don't understand your personnel, and or if you do understand your personnel, you can't coach it up. So like, it doesn't reflect well on the coaches if that is the mantra and what they're trying to do, and it just isn't working at all.
Right. And other negatives from that game before we just completely two major things that continue to come up week after week: third down and then the third quarter. The third down problems, it dated it was documented in the preseason. They needed to do better. Now, they were better on third down defensively, but now they did not convert a single third down in that game. They were 0 for 10. And, you know, you're not going to do very well offensively if you don't convert on third down. Now, Josh Rosen has said it. Kind of the issue is because they'll put together one or two or three good drives, but then all the other ones are, you know, three and out or four plays in the punt. Is there, it's either kind of feast or famine, and that it's just you can't do that. And then the other part is they haven't scored a point in the third quarter. They've outscored 42-0
all year,
and it was bad against Minnesota because they, you know, 13-10 going into halftime. And then what happens? Minnesota comes out in the opening drive in the second half, scored a touchdown. Cardinals go three and out, then they score a touchdown again. And now it's a blowout. Now they got back within 10, and this is a fun stat, is that the Cardinals are unbeaten against the spread over the last four games, so at least they're beating Vegas. They're 3-0-1, so the 10.5 point point spread that there was going into the Minnesota game, hey, they covered, so they won according to Vegas. That said, it doesn't make any sense at all. It's one of those mind-boggling stats that they've been outscored 42-0. This is where they're losing their games. You know, in the games where they've had leads, the third quarter is what kills them, and then they haven't been able to make plays in the fourth quarter to do it. But if you put yourself in a hole in the second half in the third quarter, you're really limited. You're limiting yourself in terms of time to be able to make things happen.
Yeah, and then the weird thing is that if you're always playing from behind, obviously you can't run the ball. Again, 28th most attempts in the NFL, so, I mean, bottom five. And then, but you can't do it effectively. We've talked about that. And then you look at the fact that then you can't, then teams know you're going to throw the ball. And then, you know, like the Josh Rosen interception, that was a fantastic defensive call by Mike Zimmer, who's a great defensive coordinator, and an easy one at that, right? Like, it was an easy call because they knew it was, I think it was, what, 3rd and 8 on that play or something like that, 3rd and 9. So they knew they had to throw the ball plus 10, and who are they likely going to throw to in that position? All right, well, let's put three guys around Larry Fitzgerald, right? And then, you know, on a couple of the sacks, before Justin Pugh went out, there was a play where they were in a 3-3-5 defense, and they showed blitz in the A-gaps, which is either side of the center, and then they pulled out of that and just brought three guys. Well, when Linval Joseph was actually lined up outside of the guard, he was lined, or, you know, kind of head up on the guard, and he was head up on, like, Justin Pugh, and then he went into the gap between Mason Cole and Mike Iupati, and Pugh went with him, and in comes, I believe it was Mackenzie Alexander on the play for a clean blitz, and Justin Pugh's literally not blocking anybody. And again, it's a 3rd and long play on a desperate team when you're down by multiple scores, so you don't have the option to even try and run the football. So what you're doing is you're putting your young quarterback into bad positions almost every series because he's always having to play from behind, and now defenses are a lot more complex when you're having to play from behind.
Is there anything else that stands out to you as the major problems in that game? I think we've documented pretty much.
I will say this too, and you hit it with the runs, but it's beginning to show the wear of the linebackers in this game. the touchdown pass to Adam Thielen was a play where you saw that this team, Josh Bynes is playing very well, but he's playing very well for Josh Bynes, right? Like, he's not playing at a Pro Bowl elite type level for a linebacker. And we see now that Wilkes's defense is so linebacker dependent, and it's just not fair to a guy like Josh Bynes to have to do that. So, you know, that play where Bynes ends up on Thielen and, you know, he's supposed to carry him down the seam and it just doesn't happen. Like, that's not fair to Josh Bynes. That's not who he is as a player. And so expecting him to be able to do that is just, I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's where the Cardinals are right now. And again, that goes back to what I said, kind of like understanding your personnel. Like, that, I get that that's the defense you run and that you're comfortable with, but it's getting to the point where you're actually kind of sacrificing the ability of your players because they don't fit the scheme.
Positives. What are the positives? There were a few positives.
Oh, I think there were a number of positives. I think the first positive is that Josh Rosen is really, really advanced for who he is. Like, when you look at his statistics, they don't even begin to tell the story of how bad the offensive line around him is and how inconsistent his wide receivers are, as well as how inconsistent, I'll put it, his offensive coordinator is. So all of that, and he's still producing at the level he is as a rookie, that's really, really impressive. And I think it's done a nice job. You know, and you're starting to see the maturation and hopeful, you know, beginnings of a long and prosperous connection of Rosen and Christian Kirk.
And that's one of the other positives for me is the fact that we entered the season, at least entered the training camp in the preseason, believing that, you know, with what they have on offense, is that Christian Kirk would be a bit part. He is almost their number. He really this year has been their number one offensive weapon, their most productive offensive player this year. His screen game is good. He can make people miss. He's winning down the field, so he's not being just a slot guy. He's winning routes down the field. He's making plays. He has had a couple of drops, but you have to be incredibly pleased with the development of both Rosen and Kirk. It gives you a lot of hope for what you're doing there. Now, obviously, second week in a row, the Cardinals defense scores, and the turnovers, the takeaways they're getting, they're starting to, you know, we saw the gazillion they had against the 49ers. They got two more against the Vikings. And so it's looking like a trend where they are taking the ball away, a trait of a very good defense, which means, hey, if they can shore up some of these things, we could see some very, very good defensive performances. If we could just get competent, even just competent, average offensive play, just imagine how much better that defense can be. And Chandler Jones appears to have found his form. Dominant, dominant, dominant. It looks like he's kind of found his place in this new defense as a defensive end. His numbers the last couple of weeks have been, you know, as disruptive as he was being last season, something that is very, very encouraging moving forward. He is one of the biggest playmakers they have on defense.
And you wonder at what point it started to click for Jones, and then if it'll click for others. But it goes back to kind of our conversation at the beginning. You know, Jones and Peterson are elite players, anyways. So it's really hard to it's hard to put the same expectations on other players when you know, is it fair to expect a player like you know, a Benson Mayoa, who had a kind of a struggle in this game, is it fair to expect him to step up and be a similar type player? I don't think it is. And so that's the hard part, is it's like, all right, well, what do you make of this, where you have guys like Chandler Jones, who, you know, they didn't start as fast or as well as they ended last year. But now, like you said, he looks better than at times last year. I mean, the last couple of games, he has been one of the best defensive players in the NFL on the defensive side of the ball. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it comes back to, you know, how close are they to being a good team? And so that's the first thing. I think you like the Buda Baker play. One of the biggest criticisms of him as a player coming out was that he did not do a great job of forcing turnovers. And I understand he didn't force the turnover. Again, that was Jones that forced it, but he was the Johnny on the spot. That was probably the most Tyrann Mathieu honey badger type play that we've seen out of Buda Baker thus far, in the fact that Mathieu had this like sixth sense of where the ball was going to be and being there to make a play, and that is what made Mathieu a unique and, you know, special all pro type player. And to get Baker to that level, and even to expect him to get to that level again, because like Matthew's ability was innate, is unfair, but it sure did look really good on Sunday. And I think I'm going to continue to praise him. I think you have to continue to praise Patrick Peterson, for his play and the way he's really worked at being physical, because that's not his comfort level. It really isn't. And so I think you have to praise him for what he's done and how he looks this year.
And with that, we'll move on to the next segment of the Rise Up Seared podcast. When we come back in the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk about the matchup on Thursday against the Denver Broncos. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Seared. We're back on Rise Up Seared podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And let's move on to the game against the Denver Broncos and kind of talk about what we see from both teams in this matchup. Two of the most struggling teams, the Cardinals have struggled really all year. Denver has lost four straight. Where are the matchups that you believe are the ones to kind of pay attention to?
You know, that's tough, because this Denver team is really, I mean, they're not good. But one of the things that the Cardinals have struggled with this year, and after watching San Francisco last night against Green Bay, I truly, truly believe if Matt Breida or Breida or however you say his name had not gotten hurt in that game, that the 49ers probably win that game. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you see that this is a team in the Broncos where the Cardinals can take advantage, because Case Keenum's, you know, really not a good quarterback, right? Like,
well, and he's been is very turnover prone, which is what the Cardinals have been taking advantage of lately.
Right. And so that's the thing. So when you look at it from that perspective, that is an advantage for the Cardinals. But here is what the issue is. Here's what the problem is. The Broncos run the ball extremely well. They just don't ever run the football. And so it's like the inverse of the Cardinals, right? Like they run the ball well. They just don't want to run the football. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it's going to be interesting, because if the Broncos want to run the football, you would think that they'll not have a problem. But if they're really going to make an effort to have Case Keenum beat the Cardinals, I think that's where the Cardinals have an advantage, because Case Keenum has really played poorly this year.
Yeah, Denver's got, you look at the numbers, they're number 19 in rushing attempts. They're number 10 in yards per game. They are numero uno in the league in yards per carry, which leads me to kind of my concern. Now, obviously, you've got two defenses that do not play the run well. The Cardinals, what, are 31, and the Broncos are number 32. The problem is, and so you think, well, this is the game where David Johnson can break out. Oh, well, maybe. But here's the thing. The Cardinals' rushing attack is bad. And so you put a bad rushing attack against a bad rush defense, you don't know what you're going to get. Denver's got a good rushing attack against a bad defense, which tells you, oh boy, this could get ugly.
Now, but the thing is, they don't run the football. Like I don't understand it. You have Case freaking Keenum as your quarterback, and I understand that they've been playing from behind quite a bit, but you really want to do that? Like, you want to put the game in Case Keenum's hands? That's just irresponsible football to me.
He's the $18 million man, right? So, yeah, it's an interesting matchup. I kind of look at some key matchups. One being, I want to see Chandler Jones against Garrett Rolls, and I'm very intrigued what happens on the other side of the lineup with Marcus Golden against either Jared Vildier, who hasn't practiced yet this week, as of Tuesday, and might sit out. So you might get Golden against the backup, and Golden appears to be coming. He appears to be rounding into form. Another key matchup for me, which, you know, Patrick Peterson against anyone, but I'm also want to see Case Keenum against the defense overall. Can he fight his turnover proneness? Because he was not turnover prone a year ago. Case Keenum has always been turnover prone, because he is not afraid to throw the football. He's not afraid to put the ball into small windows and doesn't always do it well. On the other side of the ball, what to do? Can Josh Rosen overcome? Can he, you know, play off that home field and do what he did against Seattle, only have his receivers come through for him? Now, it's going to be interesting because, you know, they do have two very good pass rushers, one Von Miller, one Bradley Chubb, the rookie. And it's going to pose a little bit different challenge because of their rush positions, because they don't play up on the defensive line. So these are rush linebackers, not a traditional edge player, not a defensive end, but they play a rush linebacker in a 4-3, which will make for an interesting matchup for whoever is playing on the offensive line this week.
Yeah, and that's a thing that's hasn't been there this year. I know Von Miller's been dealing with some injury issues. I talked with the guys at Mile High Report, the Denver Broncos SB Nation site, and, you know, one of the conversations I had with them and one of the questions I asked them was, are Broncos fans okay with passing on Josh Rosen at this point for Bradley Chubb? And they said no, but that he finally had his, you know, quote unquote breakout game last week against the Rams, who, let's be completely honest, have a much better offensive line than the Arizona Cardinals. And so that is a concern to watch, because Von Miller hasn't been Von Miller this year. Bradley Chubb has not shown to be worth the fifth overall pick through the first five games, but then he starts to get it and turn it on in game six. Oh man, that's, and then of course you get him on a short week in game seven, coming off a game where, you know, you had two starting offensive linemen beat up and leave the game injured. Andre Smith's always basically a coin flip, right? If he's going to make it through a game. Oh, sorry. Your main backup have to leave the game. Do we even know what's going on with the Vujanovic guy?
He hasn't practiced either. He's, you know, they lost three guards against the Vikings.
Right. And so that's the whole thing that you look at is you like, okay, so we're going to move Wetzel to left guard. And so is the, it's the big guy that they signed from Carolina going to be active this week to back up Blaine Coswell? Is he going to be active this week for the first time to back up Andre Smith, who we know is injury prone? So like all of these things are, they set up to be bad for the Arizona Cardinals, but here's the kicker. And here's the part that like should give Cardinals fans hope. The Denver Broncos may be worse off in the coaching department than the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, the things that Vance Joseph and Bill Musgrave and the staff of the Broncos have done to a previous Super Bowl winner is just, it's really unheard of to see how bad a defense as talented as the Broncos is right now. And when you look at this game in Thursday night, there's always that aspect of things as well. You know, the Cardinals are coming off a game where they struggled a little bit, and you see the aspects of this team needs something positive going into this 10-day break before they take on have one more game before the bye. And so how do they come out in this game? How do they get ready for a game against another struggling team, and where does that come from? And the thing is with the Broncos, they are playing really bad football at this point. And so when you have a rookie quarterback in Josh Rosen, even against elite defensive players, like Jess was talking about, it can still put him in a position to have a big game. Now, we've talked about maybe overcoming the offensive limitations, whether it's the line, the backs, the wide receivers, or the play calling. But this is the type of game where bad teams can find a way to get kind of healthy and have productive games. And I think that's where this is going to get interesting for the Cardinals, is because are they going to show some fight? I thought they actually showed fight in the Vikings game. I don't know what you thought about that.
It did look like it. And that's the part that was good to see, is that while they had problems, there was a little bit of spark of life. I mean, defensively, they were feeding off, and obviously they had the run issues. They didn't stop everything, but they did have some good defensive stuff. They tried offensively. They saw some life there in the fourth quarter. And you got the feeling that, well, maybe they can make a game of it. They didn't ultimately, hopefully a return home.
But they didn't look incompetent.
Right.
Offensively, they did at times. But they didn't look incompetent.
And that's what you want to see. And that's what kind of this whole wild card thing with the Thursday night game. You never know exactly what you're going to get. Now, the last two primetime games have been extremely entertaining. We could see the same thing again, because I'm not sure which way you end up going, whether you're going to end up with a lower quality defense or a lower quality offense. It could turn into it could be one of those very ugly games for three quarters and then things pick up in the fourth. But I anticipate them coming out and playing okay. I'm not saying that they're going to be good. I'm not going to say that they're going to execute. They're going to come out and be clicking on offense. But You know, like I mentioned in the show last week, maybe what they need to open up the running game is to finally have the passing game click overall. And they began to do that last week. But as week to week goes by, maybe we can actually see, you know, Josh Rosen being given more to do, because guess what? He can handle it.
Right. And that's the thing, is it's going to be really interesting to see if this team can, you know, it's going to be interesting to see which team is actually worse, because there's a lot of talent on both of these teams, and there's a lot of what has been. I mean, for the Broncos, this may be Vance Joseph's last game if they come out and lay another dud against what has admittedly been a very bad Cardinals team thus far. But on the flip side, for the Cardinals, you know, if they have a good game, does that start to spark a turnaround and more belief in the coaching staff? I don't know. That's what's going to be interesting, to see how this not only shakes out, but then the fallout from the next day.
And that's what we're going to talk about next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, Best Hour of Cardinals Talk on the Web. We'll come back and we're going to talk about, is this a must win? What sort of heat will the Cardinals coaching staff feel? Is there going to be a midseason firing? And ultimately, what's it going to take for this staff to not make it to next year? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the Best Hour of Cardinals Talk on the Web. And let's talk about the situation here. I don't know if this is a must-win game or not. At 1-5, I don't know what the mandate was, and that's the hard part about this. I'm not sure what the mandate was from the front office, what type of – they got off to their bad starts. And if they were given a mandate as to, okay, this needs to happen, or if now they're just looking for, hey, we're going to try and win games the best we can, and we're going to look for progress. We want to make sure that this coaching staff is getting the team in the right direction, even if it's not resulting in wins right away. We're looking for direction. Or maybe there isn't some sort of ultimatum going on. But the thing is, people, there's speculation. I didn't have this, to be fair, this hasn't been a case where we've heard reports of discussions within the organization whether or not to let Mike McCoy go, or Steve Wilkes, or there's been no real job security discussion other than speculation by media, because it's natural to talk about this with this nearly historically bad numbers the Cardinals are putting up. Do you see a scenario in which Mike McCoy is actually let go during the season? I'll tell you, like I said before the show, I'm not sure that'll happen. And I'm not sure the Cardinals want to go that direction, because of Josh Rosen. If they want to start doing that carousel of offensive coordinators that many young quarterbacks do,
I think I think it's possible, because they are so inept right now. And so if you come out again and you play, like I said, a bad Broncos team, and you look completely inept again, I could see it. I mean, it wouldn't be my first choice, obviously, but it's something that could definitely happen, because of, like you said, like, it's historically bad. It's not like it's bad. It's like, it's historically bad. I don't know how else to explain it. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it could definitely be one of those situations where you end up with a coach that has to go. However, if things get better, if some way, somehow they come off and they look good, I think it gives him another week, because then they have the bye after that, right? So at least it gives them one more.
Right, because they'll have the mini bye, they'll have San Francisco, and then they'll have a bye for real. And San Francisco game, winnable.
It is. But here's the other thing. And the one reason I could see them pulling the trigger. And that's because, and I know he's never been an offensive coordinator in the NFL, but that's because they have Byron Leftwich. And so if you promote Leftwich, it's the same voice that's been with Rosen and in Rosen's head since he was brought in. And so, you know, can you, would it be smart to have Leftwich calling plays for the first time in his career after a, let's say, I mean, obviously if they fire him, I think we're talking about a 1-6 start at that point. So would that be smart? I don't know. I honestly don't. But at the same time, as you said, the you can't just fire McCoy and then have try to bring somebody else in or bring somebody from somewhere else. Like, it has to be from within the organization. And for that reason, I think the only move that would make sense would be to promote Leftwich, so the voice that he hears is one of familiarity and one that you can see him being comfortable with.
For me, and this is where, you know, something that a lot of people talk about is compare last year's team to this year's team. And something I'm going to point out, I'm not trying to make excuses, but when you look at last year's team, in fact, the last 2 years, and you talk about what Bruce Arians led the team. So they managed to go 8-8 with Drew Stanton, you know, and Blaine Gabbert, a quarterback, with Kerwin Williams at running back at the end of the year, and with, you know, basically chicken wire and duct tape on the offensive line, it felt. And they went 8-8, but they went 8-8 in a system that had continuity for 5 years. So they weren't learning a new system. It was tweaking the system to match the players that they had. This is year one in a new system that's very different offensively and defensively on both sides of the ball. It's just different. And so while it is logical to say, well, this team, you know, look at last year's team. This is atrocious, you know, and we're going to keep pointing to this as the message is from Josh Rosen, from Steve Wilks, from Al Holcomb. It is a few mistakes. It's one or two mistakes from several different players over the course of the game that's really kind of setting them apart, and which are mistakes that hopefully, which should naturally begin to disappear as assignments become more naturally known. People start buying in more. And so, you know, while things look inept, it's not like they're just everything is terrible. There's enough terrible to keep them. And Josh Rosen said it. It's like, we're a good football team that's not performing well. And the results makes them look like a completely inept team. And offensively, they look kind of inept. But they're not that far from being solid. And that's probably the best way to describe them. They are almost good, but that almost is far enough away that they look bad.
And in the end, what ends up happening is it just becomes a Band-Aid on a problem unless Leftwich is willing to kind of really change the playbook more than anything, which means that you probably would see similar struggles. So let's just say they fire McCoy on Friday, right? Like, they're 1-6. The offense is still on a historically awful pace. And so they decide, okay, we gotta make a move. We can't continue this. And I mean, it's not like you come out and expect Leftwich to perform a miracle and they're putting up 42 points after 10 days, and which would really be like 7 days of practice. It's not like you're expecting them to come out and perform miracles. Like, it doesn't happen that way. And so, you know, you'd probably see another 21, maybe a 24 point offensive output, which would be huge. I mean, let's be honest, that would be the most points the offense has scored this year. But when you put it in perspective, it would probably be like the Raiders game, which is week 11, I want to say. You know, so game 10, week 11, before you would actually start to see any like real consistent output, because it would be not only a new voice, but it would be a change in philosophy, maybe not a change in playbook, but it would be a change in a lot of different things, even bringing in a guy in house.
Yeah. And in going to the next question, which is, do you think the Cardinals would fire Steve Wilks after one season? I'm going to go back to the Cardinals coaches that they've had. The last time they fired, since they come to Arizona, I can recall two in-season firings, and that was the Gene Stallings firing when they went to Hank Coolman, and then Vince Tobin when they went to Dave McGinnis, and McGinnis ultimately became the head coach. The Cardinals are not a team to bail after a year. And there'd have to be real, like they've completely lost the locker room for that to happen. And I don't know if that will happen this year because the type of leadership.
I think the only way it happens is if there's already a disconnect with like McCoy or Holcomb or something, one of the main pieces, and no changes are made. You get what I'm saying? Like if there's an actual problem within the locker room and the veterans, like a Patrick Peterson or, you know, a Larry Fitzgerald has obviously not to the press, but in private, gone to Wilks and been like, hey, this is an issue that we need to address. You know, I'm not saying fire him, but let's look at changing some things or doing this or that, and nothing happens. That's the only way like a revolt happens. And it goes back to what we said with our trade thing, right? Like, you're not going to trade Patrick Peterson unless he tells you, trade me. And in that way, I don't think anything comes of it. I don't think anything happens. But in the same sentence, we never know because we're not in that locker room day in and day out. And so who knows? Maybe there's already unrest. And that's why, you know, because while media does create speculation and narrative, they also do have inside information. And so there can be voices that they hear that are telling them like, hey, like we don't like this offense or we don't like this defense. We're unhappy with X, Y, or Z. And so if that's actually happening, maybe that's where, because that's the thing that's different to this to me is that when you're hearing guys like John Gamadoro and Dave Burns talk about it, or you're hearing Ron Wolfley make a plea that this is ridiculous. He's a great NFL offensive coordinator and he shouldn't be even be on the hot seat type thing. That speaks to me that there is that somebody's heard something of unrest. And let's be honest, that makes sense. They're 1-5. I mean, they're a bad football team. So when you're a bad football team, there will be players that are expectedly unhappy. And so from all of that, I think you could see something on Friday. I don't think so. And then you could see something after 1 year, but like you said, I think it would have to come from a number of veterans, like not just Larry Fitzgerald, although he should have, you know, some of that cachet built up. But you would have to hear it from like, you know, a Chandler Jones, a Patrick Peterson, an Antoine Bethea. Like if Antoine, who's been on some god awful teams, is like, hey, this is a lot like those 49ers teams I was on, you might want to, you know, bail out of this pretty quickly, then maybe you listen.
And with that, hopefully we have the on the days to come after the Cardinals play on Thursday, and hopefully it's a win, that all of this speculation kind of fades away, and then you can have a chuckle at the stuff that we're talking about until we come back next week. Anything else on the show, Seth, that you want to talk about?
No, I hope this is the week that they start to put it together consistently offensively. I've been waiting just to see like a Josh Rosen breakout game.
That would be fantastic. So that'll wrap this up. Episode 206 on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, Best Hour Cardinals Talk on the Web. We'll be back next week. That's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. I'm Jess Rip from CardsWire.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week. Go Cardinals.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Last year, Purple Brick sold 3 times more homes than any of the other top 10 estate agents.
What the? Really?
How's that then?
Shut the front door.
Well, I'll be a monkey's uncle.
That's amazing.
I'm blown away.
Holy koi!
No way.
That's extraordinary.
If that's left you a little surprised as well.
Book a free valuation at purplebricks.co.uk.
Independent sales data from 20 CI for 12 months to April 2018. See purplebricks.co.uk for more details.